Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I am the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. I've said that now for over 1,000 interviews, and one of my 1,000 interviewees is back. Last time Gauri Nanda was on here, she talked about how she created Clocky, a clock that sits on your nightstand and goes off and, frankly, actually goes off your nightstand and makes you chase it to help you wake up. We talked about how she went from idea to manufacturing, etc., and how she launched other related products. Well, she's back, because that wasn't her last product, wasn't her last business line. Today, I want to invite her back to talk about how she created Toymail, a messaging system for children where you can send messages from your phone to a toy anywhere in the world. She designed these beautiful toys. She made them into products, and she sold them. Gauri Nanda, it's great to have you back here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Just to catch up. Last time when we talked about making these alarm clocks, you had all these issues. Do you remember the worst of all the issues that you had turning that idea into a physical product that was in people's hands?
Yeah, I would say I think the biggest challenge with starting a company is just finding the right people to work with, whether those be your employees or your manufacturing partner or your logistics partner. So that has always been the biggest challenge.
Yeah. Didn't you have to fly out to your manufacturer to watch them in person to make sure that the whole thing worked out because you were having trouble working remotely?
Absolutely. I mean, when you come up with a new product idea and something that's never been done before, you really need to be on the ground there making sure that things are happening to your specifications. I mean, if you're creating something, sort of improving an existing product idea, it's possible that you can do it remotely. But when it's a completely new design, there's just so many variables, and you really want to be there to look at the specifics of all the details.
All right, one last question about that business before we get into Toymail, and that is, how many overall products did you sell?
Well, I don't know if I have the exact numbers.
Roughly.
I'm close to a million units, and we have a whole range of clock products now, Clocky, Ticky Tocky, and the new Pop Clocky.
Wow, a million physical products in a million people's hands, roughly.
That's correct, yeah.
Wow, all right, so then you had an idea that became Toymail. Where did the idea come from?
So I was working with my best friend, who's a mother of three, on the alarm clock products on and off. And, you know, we would sort of sit together and work on new product ideas, and sort of realized that, you know, as we sort of have young kids in our lives that we're close to, as much as we love work, you know, we feel the pull of our families, and there's really no good way to get in touch with little children that you know, that are too young for phones.
So, give an example of when you or maybe a relative wanted to get in touch with a child and just said, "I'm not about to call them up and Skype them or anything. I need something
else." Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been experiences where I've been traveling. I travel a lot for work. And, you know, a three-year-old is not going to get on the phone with you and have a conversation. But I would think of things that I wanted to say to them. And I thought, you know, why isn't there an asynchronous way to get in touch with little kids? Skype can be difficult because children will play with the keys on the keyboard or, you know, want to watch a movie instead. And so, actually, our whole mission with our company, with Toymail, is to create technology for kids that doesn't put them in front of another screen. We hear from parents all the time that screen time is a constant struggle, and we believe we can change that. We can create open-ended experiential toys that do really exciting things, that have evolving content every day, but do it in a way that doesn't plop a child in front of another screen.
You tell me before we started that this idea of asynchronous communication with children could be expressed in lots of different ways. What are some of the different ways that you thought of before you hit on the product that I'm looking up here at my screen and seeing?
Yeah, I mean, actually, the product that you see now, there are very simple mailbox characters. And of course, we stuck with animals because children love animals. They all have their favorite animals. And, you know, that we decided on that just to really get across the message of mail, that this is mail going to toys. And, you know, for us, less is always more. We believe in a simple design aesthetic for branding purposes. But You know, the technology we've created, we can put into any form factor. So we believe that we can put this into characters, you know, beyond these mailbox characters, of course. We can put them into characters that might already be popularized by other brands. And so our whole mission is, you know, we've got this technology and we can put it into millions of toys and have toys, you know, be sort of living and breathing almost in a child's bedroom. Besides messaging, we can do new content like stories and songs, take children on adventures every day. So why
the mailbox form factor? I can understand how in the future you might say, hey, our software just works. Our idea works beyond mailbox toys that look like mailboxes. Why don't we put it in an Elmo and have Andrew's mother send a message via Elmo to Andrew's son or that kind of idea. I can see how you'd go to that. Then why start out with a mailbox? Did it have something to do with any market research, with your ability to produce these things, or was it just what you fell in love with?
A little bit of both. I mean, what we realized is that what we've created is Wi-Fi technology where we can send out any content, but we wanted to start with the specific application of messaging because we believed that parents who go to work every day, grandparents who are living in another state, there's just so much opportunity to stay connected to kids through toys. And so that was really just the first application of this, the use of this technology.
Okay.
But yeah.
All right. So we asked you before this interview, what's the first step that you take to create a product like this? And you said, well, the first thing is to actually just sit down and draw it so you can get feedback from people. What did that original drawing look like and how did it change with the feedback that you got?
Oh, I mean, there wasn't just one original drawing. We had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of sketches that we put together. And, you know, it was everything from characters that, you know, that maybe are more conventional to figuring out how do we get the idea of mail across with the toy. And you know, really just sort of run the gamut of what this could be, which is, you know, which could be so many different things.
Do you remember an example of an original design that you created that after showing it to some kids or showing it to parents, you said, oh, this is clearly wrong. I'm glad I showed it to them. What's an original design that did that?
Well, we had some cube-like characters they were smaller and really just the children weren't sort of grasping them just because of the size. So, you know, form factor can be a study in many things, shape, size, materials, colors, all of those things.
I see. So where I would think, hey, they're children, the smaller the better. And frankly, technology in general, unless we're talking about phones you want or computer screens, you want the smaller the better. And in this case, you showed it to kids and it just wasn't the right fit in their hands. So you did more than sketches. You actually started to create prototypes too.
Absolutely, yes. We had to do that. And that was mainly for the sizing and the proportions.
Before you even got to that, you had to create 3D models. You used something called 3D Studio Max. How is that?
Yes. We've used plenty of different 3D software. We have a bunch of people on our team that just kind of go at it and try to visualize this in 3D. It's certainly the second step after sketching, and then we go directly to just printing them in a 3D printer.
Who is it on your team who does this? I didn't even realize you had a team at this point.
Oh, yes. So, you know, if it's myself and, you know, we've worked, so my co-founder, we started the company. We brought on extra help contractors as well as interns. And now we have a team of about four people for sales and marketing as well.
So when it comes to 3D modeling, who does that? That's not an intern's job, is it?
Oh, sometimes. Yes, it is.
Really? I mean, you got an intern who could 3D model for you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's many great interns out there that are looking for experience in
that.
Where
do you find an intern like that? I could use an intern like that.
And reach out to any of the big universities.
Okay. All right. I remember that, I think after our interview, I had another interviewee who asked for an introduction to someone who created hardware. You were always open to stuff like that. Did you go in the other direction? Now that you're building a new product, did you say, who can I go out there and get as a mentor, or get as a supporter?
For the toy mail, yes. I mean, you know, the new thing about toy mail is that it's not just hardware for me. There's an app involved and there's a back end server, and so it's all about creating this platform that we want to build and grow from. So it's a lot more. It's a much bigger learning curve actually for me. So
who'd you go to?
Oh, everybody from people in the toy industry to app developers. You know, just people who've sort of both done it on both sides.
Okay. Do you have anyone specific you can tell us about? I want to get a sense of who you talk to.
Oh, let me see. Let me think. I mean, actually, I talked to some of the guys. So I talked to a lot of, you know, different entrepreneurs. I mean, some of them just smaller startups, like Debbie from Goldie Blocks. Same, I think about more names that okay. You would know. The folks at Tigly, and just, I really reach out just to all different.
And just cold emails to them. I'm an entrepreneur. Here's what I built. I'm about to build something else. Can I get on a call with you, or do you do coffee? What's your thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Coffee usually, or a phone call. Sometimes I meet them at trade shows. You know, actually, you know, I'm in New York. We have the toy fair every year here, and a bunch of us toy entrepreneurs get together every year. So,
okay,
it's really just about setting up those you know, opportunities for all these people to meet.
Who is Rick Champlin? I just noticed that nandohome.com, your site, the Twitter feed on the bottom, I was going to click on it while we were talking to get some feedback on what your day was like, and I see that it links to his Twitter feed.
He is working on our website right now.
I see. And your site is down as we speak. Is that a bit of a frustrating distraction for you, or at this point you say, you know what, the team is going to handle it?
It's down on purpose, actually. We are just transitioning over to some new things, and actually, yeah, it's sort of a long story, but it's down on purpose.
What's going on with you today? I'm trying to get a read on you because we're talking remotely. I've known you now for a while. We did our first interview, which was so fantastic. I hired a writer, April Dykeman, actually, on the team to turn it into a guide so that other people can learn how to take their ideas and make them into physical products. I'm trying to get a sense of how your day is going today, and I can't pick up on it. What's up today?
Today, yes. We are, you know, so we just are launching the Android version of the Toy Mail app. Yes. So it's all about sales and marketing right now. It's about thinking about how we're going to grow, how we're going to get investment money. You know, there's just so much for, you know, building our team up. The interesting thing about the toy market is, you know, it's more, I think it's been more complicated than just sort of selling a gadget to adults. I mean, we're dealing with children, so there's many more complexities. So there's a lot to learn, and that's what we've been doing.
Is it stressful right now?
Is it stressful?
Yeah.
I'm pretty good at managing stress.
You are.
I think.
What do you do to manage stress?
I think I've done that for 10 years now, so.
Okay.
How? I'm sorry?
Yeah, how?
You know, I just sort of, it's a psychological thing where you know that any stressful situation is going to pass and you're going to learn from it and okay. You're going to be better for it. But I also exercise regularly, make sure to feel like I'm in control of my life, whether that be health or diet or just, you know, spending time socially with friends and family.
Okay. Wow. 10 years of stress, though. That's a lot of time.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, I used to put in 80-hour weeks, and I did all that for a long, long time with Clocky, and I don't really do that as much anymore. I kind of, you know, life has to be a balance for me now.
All right, you get to the 3D modeling. It's time to actually start talking to engineers to get the prototype made. Where do you find the engineers?
Networking. I mean, almost everything is just through networking, getting referrals, and those referrals sometimes leads to other referrals, and you try things out. I mean, you know, you might get a good referral, but you might realize that person isn't quite right for you, and sometimes that takes a little bit of time with actually working with that person before you realize that.
What makes a good referral, a good connection for you? How do you know that the engineer who's going to take your 3D model that an intern or someone else internally built and turn it into a real physical prototype?
You know, I don't know that you really know, but you have a gut feeling when you speak to a few different people about, you know, who's going to communicate with you the best and, you know, who seems to really know their stuff. I mean, if you interview enough people, they will often sort of say the same things. And so you kind of go with the ones that are hopefully telling you what other people are telling you, but also telling you things in addition to that. So it's about communication as well as skill set.
Okay. You found the right engineer. The engineer, is it not a matter of just at this point in time saying, I have the 3D model, I'll hit print on that the way I hit print on a report? We're not at that point, are we?
No.
So what does the engineer do to take a 3D model and make it into something that you can't hit print on?
Well, the 3D model is, of course, just the casing and, you know, it is the internal parts. But, you know, the process we were talking about after sketching is really just for the aesthetics, the outside casing. And then from there, you know, you're working with the mechanics and the electronics. You're looking at how to size all of the parts inside the product. And where they're going to go, and then you test it out, and you might find that, you know, if you move the speaker in a certain way, it's going to be louder. So there's just a lot of back and forth between the engineering team and the design team, as well as the factory, to make sure the design is manufacturable, which is something very different than just creating a prototype.
All right. So once you have that made up, you still have to take it to a manufacturer and say, what do we need to change on this to make it so that we can produce a lot of them? How much does it cost to have this engineer take the 3D model and turn it into something that is ready to go to a manufacturer?
Well, it depends on the product you're building.
How about for you, roughly?
You know, you're probably going to want a budget. We always try to do things pretty inexpensively, but you're probably going to want to budget hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands just for that engineer or for the whole process?
I mean, it really depends on the product. What we're creating here is a Wi-Fi-based product that has an app, and it has a back-end server, and it has it doesn't have mechanical parts like Clocky does, but it's very different technology. Clocky was actually much more inexpensive to build than Toymail.
Wow.
Clocky was basically a clock and hooked to a couple of motors, and then we had to do a lot of testing on the durability factor. So it was a very much a mechanical product, and okay. Mechanical products are tend to be a bit cheaper than sort of Wi-Fi app-based products, which are quite new technology today. Connected devices in general, it's something that we're all sort of learning, and it's, you know, all the companies out there that build this technology are startups too. So,
you know, sometimes I feel like, why would anyone get into hardware, especially when you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars just to get this going? And then I think, well, on the other hand, there's a real moat here. As soon as you said hundreds of thousands of dollars, I know a few people just hit stop on this and said, you know what, I'm going to go listen to another interview. This is just too much. I can't do it, which creates a barrier to entry that I think will keep a lot of competition away. But going back to the engineering part, that's not $100,000. Is that $10,000? Is that $20,000 to take that kind of model and turn it into something that's ready to go to the manufacturer?
You're looking at, you know, somewhere probably around 50,000, but, you know, again, it really depends on the product and the complexity of it. It depends what you're trying to do.
All right. Next step then is, wow, so you're already 50,000 in. This is your money though, right?
we have friends and family funding
you
right
do.
Now.
Okay. Did you become a millionaire from Clocky?
I don't know if I'm comfortable discussing
really?
That.
All right. You know what? I'm actually surprised when people are so comfortable discussing that with me.
Really?
Yeah, you got to throw questions out there is what I've learned in life. A lot of times answers that I think people would be really shocked by, it's like nothing for them. And then sometimes, frankly, I'll tell you, Gauri, the other day I was talking to an entrepreneur. I said, I see here in the notes you're not willing to talk about your revenue, but I'm going to ask you anyway. I want you to feel comfortable saying that you don't want to talk about it, but you should know that my job is to ask questions. That's what I do for a living. And he said, okay, I'm comfortable not saying anything about it. So I start asking him the question, and then wouldn't you know it, the guy just answers it like nothing. The same thing he said before the interview started, that he knows how not to answer. He's going for it. You always have to ask questions in life.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Next step then is to create two. And how are you feeling? Like, how are you feeling right now? I'm sensing something. Are you tense? Are you feeling like?
No, not at all.
No, this is a comfortable conversation for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just hope that you're getting sort of something that you can use, and that you're. I mean, it seemed like sort of there was a lot of back and forth on what you really wanted out of this, and so I hope
it's true. You know what? Sometimes it. I wanted to make sure that this interview worked for you and worked for the audience. And the team did go back and forth. We thought, what if we could spend some time with you really breaking down this process of taking an idea to market or taking an idea from concept to a physical product? And you tell me, actually, I kind of feel like maybe we asked too much of you. You said the first step is to take drawings. And we said, well, show us the drawings. You said, I don't have those drawings, right? Or were you just not able to get them?
What do you mean? I sent a bunch of stuff, actually.
You did?
Yeah.
I never got it. We didn't get it. We thought that maybe we were overburdening you, so it didn't go in here.
That's really strange. No, I sent a... No, actually, well, I actually... No, I think I sent them, but then I think someone on your team said that you wanted to change the whole interview, so... I have tons of drawings I can share. I mean, that's no big deal.
If you sent them, do you mind if we include them with this post? Allow people to see it?
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, good. I would love that too. All right, so maybe then I was being overly protective. I feel like, not that we have a super close friendship, but your last interview was fantastic. You allowed me, like I said, to turn it into a guide for the audience, which they freaking loved. Frankly, no one knew how to pronounce your name, but they all loved it. They all said that one was good. And so
that's great.
I feel like I've got to make the second one just as good.
I mean, I know this is maybe similar to the clocky stuff, but that is sort of what I do. So the difference here is that there's a little bit more complexity involved with an app, but, I'm sure people could use a reminder on manufacturing.
I saw the app, by the way. You know what? Let's take a detour and talk about the app, because the app is really simple, right? You just, from what I remember, you just pick a child that you want to send a message to. You record the message by hitting a button. When it's done, it goes out to the child. Who designed it?
So Audrey is my co-founder.
Audrey Hill.
We designed it together. And that was another just major iterative process. I can't tell you how many app designs we went through, and it took us about a year just to kind of decide on how we were actually, the thing that we took to the app developers. So,
okay. Yeah. And when you say you spend a year iterating, how does that work? How do you know that what you're doing needs changing and what to change in it throughout that year before the product is launched?
You start with a bunch of ideas. Usually when you have a product idea, it starts very simple. We want to send messages to toys. But mm-hmm. then from there, you kind of take it to and sort of explore everything that it could be, and it becomes sort of cumbersome and really just because that's part of the process, because you have to sort of explore everything that this thing could be. And then from there, it was like we were just stripping down all the layers and making it simple again. And that happened just through our sort of gut feeling, thinking it through, living with it for a while, and also showing it to other people, showing it to the app developers that we were about to work with, who are very, experienced at these kinds of things. So, we just got more and more feedback and just learning how the app market has changed, and sort of what we like out of apps is, it has to be super quick. You pick up an app, you have to be able to do something with it right away. Otherwise, people will lose interest. And so that's something that is actually really complicated to achieve. But if you spend enough hard work and energy on it, you can get there, I think.
Do you have an example of something that was in the app that you had to remove and only in retrospect did it feel unnecessary?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we actually started out thinking about this, sort of wondering who was going to use it. I mean, we were building it for parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles to send messages to kids, to their family. And we also thought, well, older kids might use this, and so we wanted it to be playful, but at the same time be something that adults would use. And that's a very difficult thing to achieve, to achieve something that is for both, you know, demographics. And so we started out with this very playful idea of this whole sort of, the toys would be in this mail center, and there would be sort of all, you know, sort of like a post office, and there would be all of these tools that you could use. And so it was like, you know, if you've played with children's games, you have all of these tools and things that you can choose to build things. But so that's actually what we started with, and we realized, you know, this needs to be a very simple messaging.
Just send a message, no other tools.
Exactly.
What other tools did you have in mind for it?
Oh, I mean, actually, the first version of the app, the beta version of the app that we launched with, had a postcard that you were basically putting together, sort of like an old school postcard. You know, it looked great. It was super cute. Some of the users really loved it. But then other feedback we got was that just it needed to be sort of stripped down and be more, you know, very fast.
I see. And when you show it to people, how are you showing it to them? Is it just sketches on paper, or are you creating something in Keynotopia so that it looks and feels like it's working and gives people a real sense of it, or is it something else?
Yeah, I mean, we do sketches. We try to put it into its final form of you know, just screenshots that we can show people, and then eventually we did a beta test. So it's really not until people use the product, really our customers, you know, people who aren't involved in app design, that we got a ton of feedback.
Just putting it in on a phone like this, putting it in people's hands and saying, here, can you play with it and see what
Absolutely.
You think of it? That was
right.
It.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You launched on an iPhone first. How did you decide to go with an iPhone and not Android?
Just a lot of feedback that we had gotten that iOS is sort of where you want to launch first. Android devices can be a little complicated because there's so many of them. You want to get that right. So you want to get iOS first right and then go into Android. I mean, also our product is a little bit higher price point, and so I think we were reaching a specific demographic with iOS first.
I get that. One of the frustrations that I had when I was using Android exclusively for a while there was that everything was on iPhone. And so every guest that came on here, I'd have to go and get the iPhone out just so I can see the app and play with it, even if the Android was my daily phone. All right. Then it's time to actually create the inexpensive prototypes. Is mm-hmm. that where you go to China and you start to actually talk to the manufacturer and have them create it?
Yes. I mean, we're still working alongside, of course, our engineers in the U.S. at this point. But yeah, so it's just a lot of back and forth between the factory and our engineers. And I tend to go out there and spend a lot of time just making sure that all of the details are sort of nailed out.
How long did it take you to go through that process, giving them something that your engineer put together and then having them give you prototypes of that? Give you an example of what would actually come off the line once you work with them?
Well, you know, I mean, as far as going overseas, I generally, in this case, I took a couple of trips. The first just to sort of source different factories. I think I did that twice, and then I went back to the factory that I had chosen and sort of just stayed there for a few weeks working with them.
Okay. So a few weeks. And then to get the actual first prototype, how much does that cost?
Generally, making a prototype overseas isn't too expensive. It's really just putting together the parts and the 3D printing, all of that. The real cost is in the engineering.
The engineering ahead of time. Boy, I wouldn't have expected that. All right. And then next step is you need to get some investment money so you can start manufacturing it. Is that where you went to Kickstarter?
Yes, we did our Kickstarter campaign, crowdsourced it, and yeah, that was it was a great way to go. Of course, there are pros and cons to doing a Kickstarter.
What's a con to doing a Kickstarter?
You know, it's something that is very time consuming, and people think that they could just put the product up there and maybe sit back and hope that Kickstarter customers, Kickstarter enthusiasts will find it. But you really have to do a lot of reaching out to your own network and to the press.
So getting it on there is not as hard, but getting people to pay attention to it is.
Yeah, you know, there's so many Kickstarter projects these mm-hmm. days that it's a little different maybe perhaps when Kickstarter first launched. So, just getting noticed and people not sort of being like, oh, this is just another Kickstarter project. I mean, unfortunately, there's been a lot of Kickstarter projects that perhaps didn't really fulfill their promises.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure you're not sort of grouped in with that, that people know that you're actually going to put this out on the market.
I remember John from Hidden Radio did a course on Mixergy about how to get press for a Kickstarter campaign, and said little things that you wouldn't have expected trip you up. Like, for example, he went to a blogger, I think it was Engadget, and he said, I have this project. It already exceeded its goal, so you know it's legit and it's going to actually happen. Would you cover it? And the blog said, you know what? We don't cover campaigns that succeed. We only cover the ones that are getting started. We want to introduce the world to a product, not tell the world about a product that everyone already knows and funded. Little things like that.
And then I also heard from some that said that they wouldn't do Kickstarter projects because they don't know if they're going to come out on the market. There's good and bad to it, I guess, as there is with most things.
I've been following this one Kickstarter campaign for Journo, the foldable, collapsible keyboard. Boy, this guy who put it up on Kickstarter raised his money, and he must be in hell right now trying to make it work, because I see from time to time he'll send out an update but disappear on people. And then the comments rip into him. And then he'll send out another update a few months later. Well, got this bug and I'm working on it. He must just be having so much trouble. I'm dying to hear what's going on behind the scenes with him. There it is. His name is Scott Starrett. And the reason I'm saying it in the interview is someone out there must know Scott. I'm dying to know his story. I love the idea that he has. He raised $104,609, over $100,000. And even that's not enough, right? Because he still needs to now find a way to make it work. It looks like the last update was May 6, 2014. You don't know Scott, do you?
I don't know. Oh. Sorry, I can't help you out there.
You could have manufactured this on your own. You decided to go to Kickstarter. It allowed you to give something to the press to go and talk about. Do you have an example of something that worked when you went to the press and said, I've got this? This is coming out. What worked for you when it comes to getting press? You clearly did well. You exceeded your goal. You got, what, 83,000?
Yeah. We did a super short Kickstarter campaign, actually only 2 weeks, so because we wanted to actually be able to ship in time for the holidays. And so, in terms of what works for the press, I mean, you really want to let them know that this is going to come out, sort of reassure them. Especially if it is a Kickstarter thing. But, you know, it's about sort of relaying a story to the press. I mean, people want to be able to understand how this fits into their lives or their family's lives, especially, you know, if it's a product-based thing. So it's about those user stories, what people tell us.
What did you do to make it sound relevant to the press? What's an example of something you did?
I mean, for us, the simplest message that we try to get across is that, you know, as a company, we create technology that isn't about more screen time. You can stay connected without more screen time.
I see that phrase, no more screen time. That was big for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's big just because it's, you know, kids spend an average of 8 hours a day in front of a screen, and that's not good. I mean, anybody sort of with common sense can know that that's not good. But of course, there's a lot of studies to suggest, you know, the problems with that. So that was a big thing. But also, you know, giving families a way to stay connected, is, you know, it's huge. And, you know, essentially what we've created is global walkie-talkies. It's a fun way to stay connected, but also it's about this new technology that we can drive so much interesting content through.
Where'd you come up with that phrase, the screen time, no more screen time? I could see that being out there in the ether, and I noticed parents complain about it. Frankly, I was on vacation. My mother-in-law, first thing she did was showed us, me, my wife's brother said, here's a basket where everyone's going to put their phones because I don't want your faces in the phones the whole time that we're here on the beach. Mm-hmm. So I can see that issue, but it never occurred to me that I could use it. And I don't know how it would occur to you. What do you do to collect that information and make it into a message that explains to people why they should care about your product?
Well, the the basis for the product was that we wanted to put technology into physical toys. And, you know, we as children grew up playing with physical toys, not with our faces in tablets and phones. And so it's just something that came out of our own personal need. And then as we talk to more and more parents who are a demographic, we hear it constantly, you know, screen time is a constant struggle. Mm-hmm. You know, if you try to give a child a phone, and you might say, okay, well, you can play with this for a half an hour, which is fine, you know, but then when you try to take it away, they're going to have a tantrum, you know, and then they get addicted to it really quickly. And it's something that it's on everybody's sort of radar if you're a parent. And it's sort of like, this is a problem today that we're all sort of figuring out how do you deal with it. So, yeah. But at the same time, you don't want your child to sort of fall behind and not use technology that's available. So I think it's something that we're all, you know, in this together, figuring it out, and hopefully this message resonates with people so that we can continue to build products that are, you know, not harming children, at least not sort of creating a lifestyle for children that isn't completely healthy. You know what, Andrew, I have to plug in my computer.
Go for it. Okay. While you do that, I will tell everyone that this interview is sponsored by AndrewsWelcomeGate.com. You probably heard me talk about this, and the reason I'm talking about it is because it works so well. You know that as an entrepreneur, you need a way of collecting email addresses from the people who come to your site. You don't just want them to hit and disappear. You want them to stay connected to you so you can start a dialogue, so you can get to know them. So frankly, I hate to say it, but it's important, so you can market to them. And so, how do you do it? Well, you can wrestle the way I did over, I'm doing a quick spot here. You can wrestle the way I did for 2 years trying to A-B test and improve and increase your conversion rate on a page that's designed to collect email addresses, or you can get the advantages of all my testing and just use the page that works for me. If you want to do that, you can go to AndrewsWelcomeGate.com and get the page that works for me at Mixergy. It got my conversion rates to, I think, 20% or more. It works really well. It's available to you, and it's powered by leadpages.net, so you don't even have to worry about how do you integrate it with your site or even have to have a site at all. Go to andrewswelcomegate.com, and you will see the beauty of my own landing page. It increases conversions, and if you use it for your business, you can change a logo, change the messaging, make it your own, but start with a template that works. If you're trying to collect email addresses, if you're trying to start a relationship with your audience, go to andrewswelcomegate.com. You know, the other thing that, as I was researching you, seems to have helped you out is this whole idea of Internet of Things. When people talk about Internet of Things being the future, you're somehow included. Is that because you have a PR company that helped you do that?
No, I mean, we are an Internet of Things company, mm-hmm. and, you know, we're a connected toy, which there's few of us out there right now, and, you know, there's nobody really doing exactly what we're doing, and so it's a story that people like to talk about, and to think, you know, Internet of Things is not just, you know, home automation systems and things like that. I think people want to talk about sort of the other side of it, which if it's toys, it can be very playful.
Yeah. I do remember, though, I had a friend who did PR for Clearstone Venture Partners, the VC in LA, and she said, you know, sometimes what all entrepreneurs think they want is constant feature stories about their business. But if you try to get that, it's really not going to happen for most businesses. What you want is when there's a story done on a topic that you be included, even if it's talked mostly about your competition. What you want is something that you got for Toy Mail, which is when they're talking about the Internet of Things, to have you mentioned in the article all the time, or in the case of Quartz, to have your photo in there, one of the cute little girl holding up the two toys. Mm-hmm. All right. I think we've covered everything. Is there anything I missed? Anything that entrepreneurs need to know about how you built your business so that they can go out there and build a successful product-based business to Internet of Things-based business to?
You know, I think we always focus on the manufacturing and the design part, which is, you know, which is really, it's the first phase of it. And then it becomes sales and marketing. And so you really want to sort of think about how you're going to execute that. as much as you possibly can. Of course, if you don't have experience there, you want to reach out to others who have done it. But there's a lot to learn there as well.
And do you have one tip you can give us about marketing a new product, something that someone who's listening to us right now can say, I listened to this whole interview, now I have one thing I could use tomorrow?
Well, I wish I could. It really depends on the type of product. I mean, for us, you know, it's something that people like to see in action. And so we've sort of identified the social networks that are best for us, which are Instagram and Twitter and YouTube. But for another product, it might be Pinterest or Facebook or one of those. So of course, connecting with your customers through those channels is important. But you know, there's a lot more to it than that. And marketing is a huge subject. But you know, it's really identifying, I think, looking at all of the opportunities that are out there and sort of picking the top 20%, what's really going to get you, and focusing on those things, what's really going to get you there. Because of course you can't do it all, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs get tripped up trying to do it all. I mean, I know I struggle with that as well still. So.
All right, let me give people a way to follow up, and of course tell them where they can find your site. The follow-up is, if you're interested at all in manufacturing and you want a more in-depth conversation than we have right now, listen to the first shot out, especially if you're a first-time entrepreneur, first-time thing maker, someone who's making something tangible for the first time. Go back to Mixergy and type into the search bar the word Clocky. You're going to get an in-depth conversation between me and Gauri Nanda about how she did the first product and her advice for you step-by-step. Really in depth. If you want to get into marketing, I mentioned earlier Hidden Radio. The founder, John, came on here and he talked about how he marketed his product on Kickstarter. He did a few things that will work for anyone out there who's listening. If you do a search on the site right now for the word Hidden Radio, one word, you're going to come up with the course where we walk you through step by step what he did and what you can use for yourself. And I would be remiss. I don't even like saying the word remiss. Doesn't feel like me. I would be a bad interviewer if I didn't end this interview by telling you where you can see the product that we've been talking about, and it's easy. Here's where you go. Go to toymail.com, T-O-Y-M-A-I-L, excuse me, toymail.co, T-O-Y-M-A-L.co. Didn't you have a .com domain? You did. What was it?
We do. We have toymailco.com.
Toymailco.com or toymail.co. Cool. Congratulations on all your success. It's good to have you back on here.
Thanks a lot, Andrew.
You bet. Thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, guys.